Good afternoon and welcome. You're listening to The Computer Guys. I'm Dave.
And I'm Kevin, and we're The Computer Guys here from Macintawa Technologies for the next half hour to answer all your computer and technology-related questions.
That's right, Kev. It is Wednesday afternoon, 12:30 here. Means it is time for The Computer Guys. And the best way to get a hold of us if you have any questions about your computer, of course, is to give us a call, 395-1450. We'd like to hear from you. It always makes for a more interesting show, right, Kev, when we have people who try to challenge us a little bit, at least, or at least figure out if we can help them out with their problems.
That's right. First and foremost, we are here to answer your questions. If you don't want to call us, you can always send them in via email. Easiest way, computerguys@whtc.com. We'll be checking that throughout the show today as well as throughout the week. So if you have access to email, go ahead, computerguys@whtc.com, and we'll do our best to get to it on the show.
That's right, Kev. And of course, we always have some news stories here for you to educate and entertain you, because as we know, the one thing about computers and technologies, it's always changing.
Always changing. Always entertaining.
There's always something. There's always something. If we don't get any calls or emails today, of course, Kev, we can just talk about Google the whole time, which there's always enough to talk about.
That's true. Always something going on there. Microsoft's doing things. Google's doing things. Wow. Lots of stuff going on.
And of course, don't forget to check out the podcast. It's a free download through the Apple iTunes store. Just search for WHTC in the music store.
And it'll pop up, and you can listen to our old shows anytime you want.
Speaking of Google, Kev, I know you heard this.
Yeah. We better break the news.
Actually,
just
you know
hit
what?
Last night, so it's fresh.
I tell you what. Before we get into the Google news, let's go through this joke here.
All right, if it's a good one, I can.
Well, last week we discussed the joke. It really wasn't computer related. Well, I got a good computer joke this week.
Wait. Oh, wait, we talked about the
we
joke.
We talked about a joke that you wanted me to say, but it's not computer related. So we'll stick to the plot here today.
Fair enough.
Jesus and Satan were having an ongoing argument about who was better on the computer. They had been going at it for days, and frankly, God was tired of hearing all the bickering. Finally fed up, God said, "That's it. I have had enough. I'm going to set up a test that will run for 2 hours, and from those results, I will judge who does the better job." So Satan and Jesus sat down at the keyboards and typed away. They moused. They faxed. They emailed. They emailed with attachments. They downloaded. They did spreadsheets. They wrote reports. They created labels and cards. They created charts and graphs. They did some genealogy reports. They did every job known to man. Then, 10 minutes before their time was up, lightning suddenly flashed across the sky, thunder rolled, rain poured, and of course, the power went off.
Oh.
Satan stared at his blank screen and screamed every curse word known in the underworld. Jesus just sighed. Finally, the electricity came back on, and each of them restarted their computers. Satan started screaming, searching frantically, screaming, "It's gone! It's all gone! I lost everything when the power went out." Meanwhile, Jesus quietly started printing out all of his files from the past 2 hours of work. Satan observed this and became irate. "Wait," he screamed. "That's not fair. He cheated. How come he has all of his work when I don't have any?" God just shrugged and said, "Jesus saves."
I like that. That's a good one.
You know, it's appropriate, too, just considering all the lightning and thunder and everything.
That's right. So another moral of the story there, definitely back up your data.
That's right.
So that was funny. I like
save
that.
Often.
You can say you can send that to me. I'll forward that one around. That's good enough to make the rounds.
Good clean humor for the computer guys here.
That's right. That's what we're here for, in part.
That's right. So anyway, as sure a lot of people can understand that joke, having just been through all the floods and all the dead computers that we've had. And although I've got to say, I don't think that we've lost... I don't think anybody's really lost any data.
No.
From the storms and the floods.
I think everything's been recoverable. We've been able to get all the data back. So that's the good news. Because really, it's about the data. That's kind of the important thing. So
absolutely. Well, Kev, before the joke, we had mentioned Google. We talk about it every week here on the Computer Guys. Google is preparing to launch an operating system for personal computers. We've actually talked about this in the past. But it's pretty big news today for some reason as opposed to in the past. Everybody's talking about it now.
Well, we've talked about it that it might happen.
Right.
Now,
the rumors.
It's the plan. Google actually announced it on the Google Chrome OS on its blog on Tuesday night.
So it's a direct assault on the turf of software giant Microsoft, which has long dominated the market for software that runs PC applications.
Windows. Any version of Windows. I think they said it makes up 90% of computers in use today.
Google said the software, which will initially target low-end portable PCs called netbooks, would be based on, as you mentioned, Kev, the Chrome web browser, and should be available to consumers sometime in the second half of 2010. So, not for another year or a year and few months.
Mm-hmm. And then under the top layer, yes, it's based on the Chrome OS or on the Chrome browser, but it's really going to be a modified Linux version. It's going to be open source. It's going to be Linux based. That's kind of the baseline for it. If you're familiar with that, Linux is an open source alternative to Windows, which, you know, makes some people get really excited about the open source idea, versus Microsoft, which is not open source. It's a closed source, meaning they protect the code. They don't let on how it works or what it looks like under the top cover. So, this is really, you know, it's all in an effort to integrate the Android operating system, which they currently have available on a select smartphones out there. And also moving into the cloud computing model, which we've talked about before, meaning the computer essentially is just kind of a dumb terminal and it's connecting to servers elsewhere where all the data is stored. Makes it really easy to share information from one device to another. The downside is potentially you have a little less control over the information. And two, it's probably not going to be quite as fast with some really intensive tasks. Like we said, it's going to come out on netbooks, which are the low-powered, internet-only type of appliances that are out there today, really inexpensive. So, this is just broke, so we don't have a ton of details on it, but we will keep people updated.
And, of course, you won't be able to just go out right away and buy it on any computer. As we said, only on the netbooks, so yep. Only on those cheaper computers that you see for anywhere from $200 to $500. Which is still unbelievably low when you think about the price of computers.
Yep. So this is really, it's interesting news to see what's going on.
And speaking of netbooks here, Kev, Sony is going to belatedly join the netbook market in August. I don't know if you've heard about this.
No, they're getting on board?
They are. They announced Tuesday, so yesterday, that they will launch a tiny new laptop starting in August. The company's belated entry into the growing but cutthroat netbook PC market. The new addition to its Vio line of computers will cost about $630 when it goes on sale in Japan next month. So
it's funny about that is Sony's always done a good job making small computers. They've got some incredibly small, prior to netbooks even coming out, Sony has always had some of the smallest, lightest weight, most efficient little computers out there. I mean, they've released stuff on the international spectrum that we don't even see here. So it's not a huge leap for them to offer netbooks, but
they also announced here, Kev, that they will launch that in the U.S. and Europe shortly after, but they haven't said when.
Be interested to see what the price is going to be, too, on that.
Well, $630 in Japan, so I would say, if I had to guess, $500, $550 in the U.S.
So it'll be sort of a high-end netbook.
High-end netbook, yep.
Like. So,
it'll be around about the size of a hardback book.
Okay.
Run on lower grade hardware than other Sony models.
Okay.
Which is one thing about Sony's is that they're always more expensive than the average computer.
Yep.
They're nice. Don't get me wrong. They are nice computers, but they're usually a little bit more expensive.
Not always the most reliable. We see some issues with some of those, some of the notebooks, overheating problems and stuff, but really they're beautiful in some sense. They pay attention to design on that. So
and just a little notebook note on netbooks here, Kev. They're small, cheap laptops with stripped-down components. They've been the lone bright spot in the PC market, expanding even as consumers cut back on more expensive purchases.
Interesting.
But the tiny computers have low profit margins. I mean, if you're selling it for $300, you can't make much.
Exactly.
And put well-known brands in direct competition with budget manufacturers.
That's true.
Yep. So since the netbook market is expanding, Sony can't sit out forever. So the new line of Sony netbooks will be about 10 inches wide, 7 inches long, and only 1 inch thick.
Wow. Cool.
They'll also, Kev, here you go. They'll come in choice of colors. Black, white, or pink with matching mouse and case.
I think I'm going to get you a pink one. Maybe for your birthday.
Well, you know, you could do that.
Yeah, I could do that.
I'd probably let my wife use it a lot. I'm sure she would like that, actually, at home. Just to be able to sit around without having to have a bigger size laptop and surf the web.
Yeah. So this is also in the news. I don't know if you've heard about this, but Microsoft has begun talking about Gazelle. It's a new browser that they're potentially going to release. Have you heard anything about that?
I have not.
Yeah, I got a story you don't know anything about.
Well, Microsoft has a lot of products. They're always talking about something.
They first outlined Gazelle earlier this year, but they've only started to detail its thinking as of late. Basically, what they're trying to do is leverage all the experience that they have with operating systems and apply that to web and browser technology. They want to have a browser that acts more like Windows in the sense that making sure that different applications are protected from one another, even those that are running in the same site, just to make it more stable and everything to basically be more compatible. Right now, it's, you know, the internet's sort of the Wild West, and anybody can throw anything up on a page, and sometimes they play together well, sometimes they don't. And that's actually one of the biggest problems with browsers, is when you get two different types of code on there, two different applications, and they're not playing together well. So what they're going to try and do is kind of help that out. And, you know, that's sort of in light of what Chrome did, when Google released Chrome, is to make sure that everything on there is going to run together really well. So,
Kev, that's interesting that you should talk about Internet Explorer or Microsoft releasing a new browser. Because so this is a story from yesterday from Slashdot that it was posted on there. Net Applications normally releases their statistics for browser and operating system usage on the first of every month. This month, however, the data has not shown up, only a cryptic message stating that they're reviewing the data for inexplicable statistical variations and that it will be available soon. Most people, at what point, what do you think it was? 90%, I think, of people use Internet Explorer?
Yeah.
Something like that. It was a very large percentage.
Yep.
However, ZDNet has a blog post that might explain what's happening. StatCounter has released some data that shows a precipitous drop in IE browser use in North America to the benefit of Firefox, Safari, and Chrome. At the end of May, StatCounter shows Internet Explorer usage share for version 6, 7, and 8 combined at around 64%. At the beginning of June, it is now about 56%, so an 8% drop in 1 month.
Wow.
So what they're trying to figure out here is, did really that many people move away from Internet Explorer in a month? Or is it because of the way browsers report that who they are or how they work or that type of thing?
Hard to know. Time will tell.
You still use Internet Explorer 8 or 7, Kev?
Yeah, right now, just because of that, you know, we can't upgrade quite yet.
Got a piece of software. I'm sure you're on 8.
Yeah, run 8 at home. I'm not dissatisfied with the way it runs. Runs fast. I mean, I've got Chrome on there, Firefox, I switch it up, but primarily I use Internet Explorer.
You know, I'll be honest, I do too. There's no real reason for me to switch. You know, there's a lot of little things, or, you know, for people who are really interested in some of the plugins or some of the other things, yeah, there's some cool things that you can do.
Yeah.
But really, I mean, I don't even keep favorites. I mean, that's how basic it comes to when I use Internet Explorer.
You don't even have any favorites.
I don't even, I might have a few, but I never
reference them. I got a couple in the links bar. Well, less for me than more for my wife. And she's got a couple up there that she fits. I throw the weather channel up there, you know. That's one I go to pretty quickly.
See, I've got the little weather icon in the Vista gadget bar.
Yeah, but it's not as detailed. And that tells me the temperature. And
that's all I really want to know.
I want to know the 10-day forecast. I want to know the percentage. If it's going to rain, I want to even look at the radar.
You know, it just seems like they're wrong so much that anyway. So
the radar
I don't even
can't
use
be wrong. I mean, it's like a picture of what's coming. Right. I like that.
But as far as I mean, whether it's Google's Chrome browser or Firefox or Internet Explorer,
if my Internet Explorer crashed all the time, I'd definitely switch. But I'm not dissatisfied with the way it runs. I find it to be pretty fast. To do what it's supposed to do, which is kind of the important thing. And it's really compatible with most of what's out there. I found that with other browsers, I'll come across a site that just doesn't render correctly.
Other than
Internet Explorer, since it is, makes up such a huge percentage of the market. And so that's a bit of a problem. So then it's another reason for me to just kind of go back and say, I'll stick with what works.
You know, speaking of percentage of Internet Explorer dropping, when netbooks first started coming out, they all came with a version of Linux on there.
Well, yeah.
Well, most of them.
Yeah.
And now, the funny thing is, I'd like to see some statistics as far as what percentage of them have Windows XP.
Oh, it's almost a lot. It's ridiculous.
Almost all of them have XP on it now.
Yeah, and it's increased the XP sales, like, exponentially.
Yeah.
You know, because people want to stick with something that they know, and they want that intercompatibility, and they want it to be really easy. And it's, you know, hey, a netbook, it's just a smaller version of what I've been running for a long time. So, and XP, I got to admit, it does run really well on a netbook. You know, with a decent amount of RAM, it's really responsive. So
I personally like to run the netbooks down quite a bit, although I was talking to somebody recently.
Yeah, you do. You're a netbook dog.
Yeah, I don't like them. But they said the reason that they like it is because it does have a small keyboard, and they hunt and peck with two fingers. So then it works great. I thought it does make sense.
They use their thumbs like if they were using a BlackBerry.
Let's take this call here. Good afternoon, caller. You're on with the computer guys.
Yeah, could you guys give me an idea what this Bing is that comes up every time I go on for the internet? I'm not quite sure how to understand that.
Sure. Well, Bing is it's kind of like Google. It's Microsoft's version of a search engine. And they actually just released Bing, what, a month ago, Kev?
Yeah, it's been about a month. You know, but you said search engine. It's really, they call it a decision engine. That's where they're trying to depart from all the rest of the search engines out there. What they're trying to do is really integrate a lot of information onto one single query. So you ask, you want to find information about dogs. You type dogs in, and it wants to give you information about different breeds of dogs, about potentially buying dogs, all kinds of information from one single search query. So I'd check it out. It's an alternative to Google if you've been using that, or Yahoo Search, or any one of those other ones. I think some of its strong points are the travel feature. It does some really good, it consolidates a lot of information about traveling, which is really effective. The videos are great because if you hold your mouse, if you have a high-speed internet connection, and you hold your mouse over the videos, like you get the little thumbnails of all the videos. If you hold your mouse over one, it will start playing that with full video and sound to kind of give you a real-time preview of what that clip actually is. So that's probably, you know, two of the things that I like most about it. I'd check it out.
Is it a competitor to Google then?
It is, and it actually stands for, but it's not Google. That's where the name comes from. So,
least that's a joke.
Yeah. Well, I think it might be true. I'd go check it out. And, other people listening want to look at it, just go to bing.com and go ahead and start searching around with that and see what you think.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for your call.
And my personal favorite thing about Bing, is that the maps, if you type in Holland, Michigan, there's an aerial view, which we're all familiar with, you know, satellite, but there's also the bird's eye view, which gives you more of a perspective as far as height and depth go, whereas the satellite view is just the top-down view. That doesn't give you much. So, and it's really detailed for Holland. So if you go to bing.com, type in your address if you live in the Holland or Zealand area, it's so cool. So you can rotate around 360 degrees.
You know, another thing I like about it, too, is right on bing.com, the photos are great. They're beautiful photos, and they give you little tidbits of information about what you're looking at, which is, it's kind of interesting. One other thing you can check out is in the shopping section, if you're looking for a particular item, it does integrate with a cash back feature that Microsoft has going, where they actually give you cash back in an account, which I think if you get $50, you can actually ask for a check when you buy something through Bing. So you search for a new product, and then next to your item, it'll list whether it says cash back or not. So if you go follow one of those links and purchase something through that, it actually deposits a portion up to 8% into an account, which you can actually make money on. So
not too shabby.
Not too shabby at all.
Let's take a quick commercial break here. You're listening to the Computer Guys on 1450 WHTC.
Hi, this is Kerry Cooley.
And I'm Jack Godfrey. We're with Cooley Godfrey Investment Group in Zealand. Join us for WHTC Money Matters Saturday mornings from 10:10 to 11.
This Saturday, we'll discuss smart 401k moves.
We'll be glad to take your calls and emails too, so join us for WHTC Money Matters this Saturday.
Hi, this is Kerry Cooley.
And I'm Jack Godfrey. We're with Cooley Godfrey Investment Group in Zealand. Join us for WHTC Money Matters Saturday mornings from 10:10 to 11.
This Saturday, we'll discuss smart 401k moves.
We'll be glad to take your calls and emails too, so join us for WHTC Money Matters this Saturday.
Hi, I'm Randy from Great Lakes Window Coverings, and I want to welcome you to our new showroom located in the brand new ID9 Center next to Carpet Bonanza between Holland and Zeeland. Now that the summer is here, stop in and let us show you some really cool ways to beat the heat and glare. Our new solar screen shade line is an excellent way to keep the heat out of your home, all the while allowing you to view through the fabric. And best of all, when you use our solar screen shades, you will save real money on your electric bill. Great Lakes Window Coverings is a full-line Hunter Douglas dealer as well. Take advantage of Hunter Douglas rebates on select window coverings for up to $100 per window. Great Lakes Window Coverings also carries the only window coverings to qualify for up to a $1,500 tax credit. Just ask us for details. Our grand opening specials are the best they've ever been. Savings like none other. Come to the new ID9 Center and check it out. We're located on Chicago Drive between Holland and Zeeland. Great Lakes Window Coverings is a proud sponsor of the number 18 driver, Mitch Meplank, at Berlin Raceway.
Are you running on empty?
Welcome back. You are listening to the Computer Guys here on 1450 WHTC. Dave and Kevin, the Computer Guys here. Kev, we've got a phone call here, 395-1450. Give us a call here. Good afternoon, caller. You're on with the Computer Guys.
Good afternoon. I have a question about a software program for internet safety. I have some teens, and my son knows a lot about computers, knows how to build them, and he can figure things out. So I would like an answer to that question, please.
So you're just looking to filter out stuff that, you know, certain sites that you might not want them to go to.
Right. Yeah, explicit sites and things like that.
Well, you know, the first question is he listening?
That's right.
Oh.
Because then we can't talk about it.
That's
if
right.
He is.
No, he's not.
Okay. Well, there are a couple of ways that you can go about it. There are programs that you can actually put on the computer that will filter what just that computer goes to.
Yeah. That's one of the first things is if you just have a single computer using a product that you install on the computer itself or may already be built in. Now, the computer that you have, does it have Vista on it?
Actually, we have laptops.
You have laptops? Yeah, but are they recent? Is it running Windows Vista or Windows XP potentially?
Windows XP, but I think the new one we're getting has Vista.
Okay, because Vista does have some parental controls built right into it, which you can use, and it's actually pretty effective. The XP machine won't have it, so it would require an additional piece of software.
The most popular and probably most effective software program that you can put on there is a program called Be Safe Online, and you'd have to buy a subscription for each computer that you want to filter.
Okay.
And we've had a number of customers have used it, and they've been pretty happy with it. It gives you quite a bit of control, monitoring and filtering and reports and that type of thing. And they even have one with an antivirus. I don't know if that antivirus
yeah,
is any good, though.
Yeah, B-Secure Internet Filter and then B-Secure Complete Security Suite, which I think they partner with McAfee on that. I'd say maybe just try the Internet Filter. And I think you get up to 3 PCs for about $50. I think that's a yearly subscription. And that does have plugins to monitor instant messaging and everything like that as well. So that's probably one of the most popular ones software-wise.
Now, there's a second option. If you have 2 computers and you don't want to have to pay for a subscription on each one, you're probably going to have a wireless router there at your house.
Yes.
Yep. And now this one is a little bit more complicated, and a lot of people don't set this up themselves. But there's actually a free online service called opendns.com. And it actually, you set it up through your router. So like I said, it is a little more complicated, but it works really well. It works the same way. It does filtering, but then it's not limited to, you know, sometimes you put a program on the computer, you know, kids figure out the password or, you know, that type of thing. But opendns.com is a second way to filter, and that filters at the router, which sometimes can actually be a little more effective.
Okay.
So we've set that up for a number of customers. It takes about an hour or so to get it set up and then even show you how to administer that website in the future. So, but either of them would should be good options for you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
And and the nice thing too, Kev, about the OpenDNS is it actually blocks a lot of virus websites
there's
malicious websites.
That can be configured in there to block adware and other information like that. So it's not only blocking objectionable content, but also, you know, just sites you don't want to go to because they might infect your computer. So. And all that's controlled. You know, they do research and monitoring on their end to see which sites are legitimate and which ones aren't and categorize all that stuff and make that available to us. So,
good afternoon, caller. You're on with the computer guys.
Hi, I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about what you think is the ideal student computer with kids going off to college as far as software package, virus protection, that kind of thing.
Sure. Well, the first thing we always try to find out for most kids going off to college these days, well, I shouldn't say most. It almost seems like half and half. Half of them get Apples, half of them get Windows-based computers. Honestly, either of them will work just fine. It depends, too, what their major is going to be. You know, if they're going into something with graphics, a lot of times it's better to go with an Apple. But if they're just general education or they're undecided yet, a little cheaper to go the Windows-based route.
And then some other things to think about is, you know, just how they, what they're going to use it for. If basic, you know, handful of papers, email, internet research, you know, a lot of computers will do that. But if they're really into music and they like to edit video or they're a serious gamer, that's going to change the computer that you're going to want to buy. You're definitely going to need something with more storage, more memory to it, some more RAM there, and then also maybe a dedicated video card if they're into that.
But we sell Dells. We're a huge fan of Dells. We work on every make and model of computer, and we're definitely a fan of Dell computers, and we sell those. One other thing, too, that they'll want is Microsoft Office, the Home and Student Edition, and that has Word and Excel, PowerPoint in there, and those are by far the most popular programs that students use in college these days, so...
Okay, and then some sort of antivirus.
Yep. And then the other thing to check on, too, is some colleges actually provide, one, maybe Office software, and two, potentially some antivirus software for every student that's enrolling. Okay. So one thing to do is to check with the college or university and say, hey, is this provided? Because that can help keep the cost down as well.
Okay, great idea.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
And yeah, Kev, I think Hope College provides antivirus.
You know, and they really
not
do
many
it.
Of them do Office though.
They do it, and well, sometimes
if they're going for computer science or something.
Well, computer science, or sometimes they will do. They'll have a license deal where basically students can buy a license at a reduced rate for educational use. So it's worth looking into, and that's definitely something we can help out with. So
the one thing too with college students is, man, I tell you, we had a Dell technician at our office the other day installing a part, and they were making a joke about how college students. And I'm going to be general here, are hard on their computers.
Yes, they are.
So extended warranties with college students is not a bad idea.
Yep, and that's the extended warranty, not only just for problem parts, but for accidental coverage, which is something to think about in case they drop it or smash it with a hammer or, you know, something else they're going to do.
We've got 1 minute for the last call here. Good afternoon, caller. You're on with the computer guys.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. You?
This lady that just called with about, you're talking about colleges. My daughter's going to North Central College in Naperville, and they have Sophos antivirus system.
Okay.
And what parents need to know is don't attempt to take your antivirus off your system if you're going to go with whatever the college has because there's such huge conflicts. Let the college take it off for you and put theirs on if that's the route they're going to go.
Okay, sure. Yeah, we have had a number of customers take an old one off and put a new one on and have some difficulty that way. Or even not forget to take the old one off and leave it on, and then you have two running, and that really causes problems. So
yeah, so just a little reminder for parents to make sure they keep an eye on that for their
That's
kids.
Right.
Hey, thanks for the
call.
You're welcome. Bye.
And can't tell you how many we've seen where you take off an old one or you forget to remove the old one and you had a version of McAfee that expired, so you put Norton on, and then you've got two running, and
that never works out well. Is
slow.
Close down to a crawl or something doesn't run right, and oh, there's two of them on here, so...
Well, Kev, one last quick news story. Way to end the show. AOL has shut down CompuServe.
Oh, look at that. Let's have a moment of silence. Okay, that's good enough. Anyways, that music means it's the end of another show. Thanks for tuning in today. If you weren't able to tune in, you can always check out the podcast. Right now you can do that through Apple iTunes. Type WHTC into the music store and listen to this show or old shows. Also, if you weren't able to take your call today, give us a call during the week. 394-4940 is our number. We are from Macatawa Technologies. We're located on the south side of Holland, 399 East 32nd Street. That's one block west of the corner of 32nd and 31.
That's right. Well, thanks again for calling in. And remember, Wednesdays, 12:30 to 1 here at WHTC. The Computer Guys with Dave and Kevin. Thanks again, and have a great week.